Okay, we're beginning here, 16 lines down, on Tet Vav Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Mishnah says, Kol HaMinachot, that all the Minachot require Shemen Ulibona, oil and frankincense, whereas the Minchat Knot does not require that. Gemara says, Bechol HaMinachot Unot Shemen Ulibona. Is that really true, that every other meal offering has the din that it includes Shemen and Levona? Vayika Minchat Choteh. What about the Mincha V'choteh? Minchat Choteh is one of the three levels of a Chatat Oleh V'Yoreid, which at the end of Parshat Vayikra, there's certain Averot, where a person brings a Korban based on their economic ability to pay for the Korban. At the highest level, they bring a Behemah. At the middle level, they bring Ofot, birds. And at the lowest level, they bring a Mincha. That Mincha is known as a Minchat Choteh. And by the case of a minchat choteh, the Rachmana Amar, the Torah says, lo yasim aleha shemen, v'lo yitein aleha levona, that you may not have shemen or levona on that minchat choteh. So now we find another mincha, or meal offering, that is similar to the minchat kena'ot over here, that it does not require shemen or levona. Amar says, hachika Amar, you read the Mishnah wrong. Kol haminachot to'unot shemen or levona, uva'ot minachitim, uva'ot solet. That the character traits that are enumerated in the Mishnah are not every one of these is true by every other mincha, but in totality, all of these items together are unique to the minchat kena'ot, the mincha of the sota. And that is, every other mincha has shemen, levona, chitim, and solet. Whereas the minchat kena'ot has none of those. It does not have shemen, does not have levona, does not come from wheat, but rather from barley, and comes from kemach, which is coarse flour, and not solid, and not fine flour. Minchat choteh, afo pish eina tuna shemen levona, minchat choteh, even though it's similar in these two items, that it does not require oil and frankincense, nevertheless, ba'a minachitin, uba'a solet. It still comes from wheat, and it still comes from fine flour. So it has these distinctions that differentiate it from the minchat kinot. Minchat omer, similarly, afo pish ba'a minaseorim. So the Minchat Omer, even though it's similar to the Minchat Kinaot in the fact that it comes from the barley, Tuna Shemen Levona, it requires oil and frankincense, which would differentiate it from the Minchat Kinaot, Uba Geris, and it also comes well sifted, made into some sort of fine flour, Zo Eno Tuna Lo Shemen Velo Levona. On the other hand, Minchat Kinaot does not require Shemen, not Levona, Uba Amina Seorim, it comes from the barley, Uba'akemach, and it comes from this coarse flour. So what the Mishnah is saying is that the Minchat Kinaot is unique in this factor, which is that it has all of these character traits that are not found in any other Mincha. There are some Minachot that have similar traits to it in one of two of these items, but not in all four of these items does any one of the Minachot similar to the Minchat Kinaot, and that's what makes this Minchat Kinaot unique. Even though the Minchat Choteh overlaps in the fact that there's no Shemen and Levona, yet it's still distinct because the Minchat Choteh is similar to other Minachot in that it's brought from the wheat and it's brought from solid fine flour. Same thing with Minchat Seorim, even though there's overlap in the fact that they're both brought from Seorim, nevertheless, it's differentiated in that it has Shemen and Levona, unlike the Minchat Kinaot, and it's brought from fine barley flour rather than coarse flour, similar to other minachot and not like the minchat kena'ot. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Shimon, bedin hu shetei minchat choteh tuna shemen ulevona. Truthfully, when it comes to minchat choteh, the person who's bringing that meal offering as their chatat for the chatat olevi oreid, he should have to bring shemen levona. Shelo yehei choteh niskar. So that the sinner should not be a beneficiary or benefit from that. Meaning that it actually makes his korban cheaper, that he doesn't have to bring shemen ulivona. So in truth, he should have to bring it because as a sinner, he should have to expend the most money in order to attain kapara. So then why doesn't he have to bring that shemen ulivona? Korbano mihudar. So his korban will not be beautiful or nice. And so what Rabbi Shimon is saying is that the Torah does not allow the choteh to bring the shemen and levona over here in order that his korban be a very plain korban, be a korban that even involves a certain amount of bizayon in it, that it doesn't come fully adorned or does not come in a presentable, edible manner. On the other hand, if you said that it did not have to be brought with Shemen and Nevonah, then you'd have the problem of Choten Niskar. Because then someone might take the option not to bring the Shemen and Nevonah, not because of the Bizeyon aspect of it, but because they didn't want to have to pay for it. And therefore the Choten would be Niskar. So what Rabbi Shimon is explaining, why does the Torah say you may not bring it, is because they want to engender this Bizeyon or plainness of this minchat choteh to indicate the fact that it is coming for a chatat, and it's not something that one should be excited about or decorate, enhance in any way, but not because it wants the choteh to have the possibility of saving any money here. And the same thing true with regards to a chatat, ubedinu shatei chatat chelev tuna nisachim. It should be that when it comes to the korban chatat that an individual brings for the chelev, as Rashi over here says, chatat chelev is used as the paradigmatic chatat because it's found by the parsha of chatat, the iser of chelev is found there. And therefore, the Gemara uses this as the paradigmatic chatat. Others say it is because it's the most common chatat that is brought. But in general, whenever the Gemara says chatat chelev, it means the generic chatat that is brought. That generic chatat should require nisachim. It should require the libations that come with the korbanot, and that is the isaron solet, the revi'it yayin and shemen for a keves, and then it goes up higher for an ayil and a par. Shalo yehi chotei niskar. Once again, so that the sinner is not a beneficiary of the fact that he has to spend less money over here. So then why does it not require it? Shalo yehi korbano mihudar. In order that his korban should not be decorated or pleasant in any way. And it's true also that the fact that libations, especially the wine libations, are associated with shira. And when it comes to a korban of a chatat, certainly shira is not appropriate to be accompanying the korban of the choteh. And as Tosfot points out over here, the question seems a little bit strange, because the way that the psukim are written in the Torah, it's only brought, nisachim are only brought for a neder and a dava, which is a voluntary offering. So chatat is precluded, not because it's a chatat, but because it's not a voluntary offering. And so what Tosfot says is, this is the question. The nature of the question is, we should have penalized the choteh to have to bring the nisachim, even though they're normally only associated with the neder nedava. When it comes to the chatat, it should have been part of his onesh that he has to add on the nisachim on top and expend more money for it. But why don't we do that? Again, because we don't want his korban to be mihudar. Gemara asks, if that's the case, aval chatatosho mitzara v'ashamo tunim nisachim. When it comes to the chatat and the asham of the taharat and mitzora, over there they do require nisachim, even though number one, they're not voluntary offerings, and number two, the chatat and asham are usually associated with the chait. The answer to that is, the fish ain't ba'im al chait, that they do not come for kapara on a sin. Any, is that really true, that they're not coming to be mechaper on a sin? V'amar Rab Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rab Yonatan al Shiva Dvarim Nigaim Baim, the Gemara in Arachin says that there are seven things that precipitate Tzorat, the most famous of which everybody knows is Lashon Hara. The others are Shvichut Damim, Shvuat Shav, Gilui Arayot, Kasut Aruach, Gezel, Tzorat Ayin. So those seven things precipitate the individual getting Tzorat, means that Tzorat comes because the person did not behave properly. And that means that this is a kapara. The Gemara says, "Hotam minigei hu dichaperle." That's the cause for the tzarat, and the tzarat is the kapara for those items that caused them to get the tzarat. Kimaiti korban lishturei b'kodeshim hu dekamaiti. But when it comes to bringing the korbanot to the end, that's simply to remove his status as a mitzora and to permit him to partake in kodeshim once again. So the purpose of the korbanot, and again, is not part of the kapara process, but rather as a matir. And that's how Rashi explains a chatat, or the meaning of a chatat in other places, which is that it is a matir rather than a mechaper. And you can explain that even in cases where we're talking about a chatat chelev or other type of chataot, that the matir is that this allows one to re-engage in their relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the chatat, in that case, acts more like kapara, in the fact that it does permit the individual then to restore the relationship that they had with the Kodesh Baruch Hu beforehand. But in general, the chatat is acting as a matir, and over here, for the mitzvah, it's acting as a matir to return him to the ability to partake of kodeshim and enter into the mikdash. Elamiato, if that's the case, chatat nazir teituna nisachim. So then the chatat nazir should also require nisachim lefishenu ba'al achet. Because also, it doesn't come because of a chet. This is the chatat that is brought by a nazir tahor at the completion of his nizirut. And that chatat should be similar to the chatat of mitzorah, where it's not coming for kapara, but rather as a hatara, to be matir the individual, to once again drink wine, be mitame the mitim, and to cut their hair. Where it says, Savalak Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, he holds like Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, who we saw numerous times in Nidarim and Nazir, Tamar Nazir Nami Chutehu, that the Nazir is considered to be a sinner because Tzir Atzmo Min HaYayin, because he withheld himself from partaking in wine, and therefore he is deemed to be a chute. Over here, it does not mention the Asham Nazir that is brought along with from a Nazir Tameh, and question why there are no Nisachim by the Nazir Tameh that brings the Asham. The reason for that might be the Tosfot Shans suggests over here that the Asham Nazir is not the primary Korban. And since it's not the primary Korban, therefore, the Gemara does not question over here why there's no Nisachim associated with the Asham. Or you can suggest that the Gemara knew by Nazir Tameh that it was obvious that he was a Choteh, and therefore the Asham that comes with a Nazir Tameh is certainly associated with Kapara or Chet, and therefore it would not require Nisachim. Now, Tosafot over here raises two very interesting issues, one of which is that Rabbi Shimon himself is of the opinion that Nazir is a chotehu. And so then why does the Gemara quote Rabbi Elazar HaKapar and not Rabbi Shimon himself who says that a Nazir is a choteh? That's what it says lefum rihata. It's just, since Rabbi Elazar HaKapar is always associated with that opinion that Nazir is the choteh, so the Gemara, anytime it talks about a Nazir that's a choteh, brings Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, even though there are other Tanaim that have a similar opinion or somewhat similar opinions to Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, they always quote Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, who's the paradigm or champion of that position, that a Nazir is considered to be a Choteh. The other thing Tosafot raises over here is a question that we noted numerous times in Nidarim and in Nazir, as to the fact that the Gemara is inconclusive or even contradictory with its approach towards a Nazir Tahor versus a Nazir Tameh. In some instances, the Gemara quotes Rabbi Elazar HaKapar's din rock only with regards to a Nazir Tameh. And in other places, the Gemara quotes it with regards to a Nazir Tahor. And even though the word Chatat or Chet is only written by Nazir Tameh, nevertheless, it applies to all Nazirut. The reason it's specifically written by the Nazir Tameh is because Shana b'chatato, that he was doubly problematic. One is because he tzir atzmo min hayayin. And number two is either he became Tameh l'meitim, or that he's going to have charata now because he's extended Nizirut way beyond what he expected now because he became Tameh. Now he'll have regret or charata on it, which will, again, double the sin that is there. But as Tosafot points out, whether it's the Gemara or Shmuel himself, who has numerous opinions through Shas that seem to contradict themselves, it's unclear as to whether the Gemara views the Nazir Tameh as a Choteh exclusively and not the Nazir Tahor, or is the Nazir Tahor also considered to be a choteh, just a lesser of a choteh than the Nazir Tameh. And as we noted in Masechet Nazir, the status itself of the Nazir is not so clear as to whether we view that positively or negatively. And this inconclusiveness or the vacillation of the Gemara might revolve around exactly this issue, as it's not so clear whether the Nazir Tahor is really to be viewed positively or negatively. But Tosfot, of course, makes it clear that by a Nazir Tameh, he's definitely called a choteh, and that's why we don't have to ask any questions with regards to the korbanot of the Nazir Tameh. Rabbi Gamliel Omer. Rabbi Gamliel at the end of the Mishnah says, "Kishem shemaseh masib behema," just like her activities were the activities of an animal, who again is not monogamous, "kach korbana machal behema." Therefore, korban is brought from feed that would normally be given to the animals, the se'orim. Now the Gemara says, "Tanya, Amar lehen Rabbi Gamliel de Chachamim." Gamliel said to the Chachamim, "Sofrim, heinichuli, sofrim, leave me be ve'edrashena, and let me give you the drasha, kamin chomer." Over here, the translation of kamin chomer, Rashi says, budden, which means that it's something that connects the two ends of the collar of the shirt like a button, that I'll do it come in Chomer. That'll fit nicely. The button will go into place. Let me give you an explanation that is fitting over here. Tosfot over here brings Perish Rabbeinu Hillel Margalit. Let me give you some precious jewel or Bosem, some aromatic perfume. Or the Rav Tzadja Gaon brings down Gemin HaMaaseh. I'll give you something to work with. But whatever the exact explanation of Gemin Chomer is, Rabbi Gamliel is saying, I have a better way to explain this situation. Now, better than what is what the Gemara discusses now, which is the Shamait LeRabbi Meir DeKamar. In the first barak, we read the bright on Daf Chet Amud Bet that described the Midah Keneged Midah that is mentioned in the Mishnah, how it applies to Sota. And there it says, Rabbi Meir DeKamar, he hechelato ma'adnei olam, she fed him all these delicacies, the fikach kurbana machal behema. Therefore, kurban comes from the feed of animals. Amalei atinach ashira. That works well for a wealthy woman who could afford to feed all the delicacies. Ania ma'igla meimar. What about a poor woman who doesn't have all that money and doesn't feed him delicacies? So how is there a midah keneged midah? And that's what Rabbi Gamliel says. I have a better explanation of the midah keneged midah here, which is more inclusive and throws a broader net, which is Ela Kashem, Shema Seha Maseh Behema. Just like her activities, her actions were like that of an animal where she was not loyal to her spouse, Koch Korbana Machal Behema. So to her Korban comes from the feed of animals, and that's what the connection between the Midah Keneged Midah is over here. Now some say the reason that the Gemara focused on that statement of Rabbi Meir is because Rabbi Gamliel said over here, Sofrim, which is not usually a terminology that is used to refer to Tanaim. And therefore, it must have been a specific accolade that was associated with a particular Tana. And Sofrim here means Rabbi Meir, or the one who is wise, like we discussed yesterday and the day before, that the word Sofer does not necessarily mean a scribe, but is someone who is a wise man or a leader. And therefore, when it says Sofrim inichuli, Sofrim is a veiled reference to Rabbi Meir, who was known for his tremendous erudition. And then you would read, Inichuli means, permit me, rather than permit me to offer an alternative explanation over here, but not rather leave me alone and let me do this. Okay, now the next Mishnah continues with the description of what they did and the procedures of the Sota. It says, Haya mevi, piale or piali, Shel Cheres, as Rashi notes over here, it's a Greek word that means a kos, meaning a cup or a goblet of sorts. Obviously, it had a particular shape, what they're describing over here. Meiri notes that it is actually the Targum of the Pasuk from one of the Pesukim of the Shivat and the Chemta, which is Hitoriri, Hitoriri, Kumi Yushalayim, Eshe Shatit Miyad Hashem et Kos Chamato, Vet Kubat Kos Hatareila Shatit Matzit. And in that Kos Atarila, the Targum Yonatan in Ishayahu, Perak Nun Aleph, Pasuk Yudzayin, and again in Pasuk Chabet, where it says Hashem says, Hinei lekachtem yadechet Kos Atarila v'tkubat Kos Chamati, lo tosifu lishtot ha'od, you will not drink it any longer. In both those cases, the Targum translates over there the word Kos of Tarila as Piale, Kasa Dilavata. And so therefore it might be a reference to the Kos Hatarila, which is the cup of anger, poison, and disgust, retribution that Hashem is going to take. And so it's a veiled reference to the fact that this behavior is deserving or similar to that Kos Hatarila that is mentioned in the Psukim in Ishayahu Nun Aleph. The word itself you can see here in the Mesorot HaShas, he brings the spelling as a Pe Yud Yud, Lamed Yud, which would then mean that it is probably more along the lines of Fiali or Fayali, because there's an extra yud in the pronunciation, but again, it's a Greek word that means a kos. And then, V'noten lo tocha chatzi log mayim min ha-kiyor. Then he puts in a half log of water from the kiyor. Yehuda omer revit. Rabbi Yehuda says you don't need a chatzi log of mayim, rather you need k'shem shema'et b'chtav kamem'et b'mayim. Yehuda's opinion, which we're going to see in the upcoming Mishnayot, is that his Parshat HaSota is shorter than the other versions of Parshat HaSota. And just like the Ktav there is less than the other opinions, so too it requires less Mayim. The reason as to why you need a half log of mayim or a quarter log of mayim, the simple explanation based on what the Mishnah is saying here is that you need enough water in order to erase the writing on the parchment of the Parshata Sotah. And so depending on the length of the Parsha, you would need more or less mayim. On the other hand, Rashi and Menachot, when the Mishnah there quotes Chatzi log mayim, says it's halacha lemoshe misinai. That is a Mesorah, halacha moshe misinai, that is a Chatzi log of mayim. Others say that the halacha moshe misinai is that it has to come from the kior and not about the size or the amount of the water. And that's associated with what our Mishnah says here is the amount that would allow you to erase the parchment. Nichnas the heichal, he goes into the heichal upanad yimino, and then he goes to the right side. Umakom hayasham amal ama, there was a marble stone there that was an ama by ama, but tavla shel shayish. And it was marble like the rest of the floor of the heichal, except this had v'taba taitak vuaba. This one had a ring in it so that it could be lifted up or removed. And then when he picks it up, he's able then to get the dirt that he needs over here from underneath it. And then he places it in the water. In order that the afar, that dirt, be visible in the water itself. From the dirt or the earth that is at the foot base of the Mishkan. One takes that. Benatan el hamayim, and then he places it into the water. So as Rashi says over here, since it does not say benatan bamayim, that you put it into the water so that it would be dissolved in the water, here it says natan el hamayim, you place it in the water, so it makes it sound like that the earth or dirt that you're placing in there will remain intact or visible even after it is placed into the water. So you have to put in sufficient amount that would be the case. This is all based on the pasuk in the Parshat Sotah, which is lakach hakohen mayim kidoshim bichli chares umin afar asher yeh bekarka mishkan kach hakohen v'natan el hamayim, that he places into the water. And our Mishnah is defining all of these items, including the mayim kidoshim. We'll see in a second about the kli chares, which is this pili that we saw before shel chares, and then min hafar, which is in the karka mishkan, which the Mishnah is describing here. And then, Natan El HaMayim, and he places it into the water, but it will remain mafar in the water, is the last piece of the Mishnah. Tana, Yalei Shel Cheres Hadasha Divi Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says you have to use a new earthenware utensil to take the water. My time of the Rabbi Shmuel. Why does he say you need a new one? Gamar Kli Kli Mimitzora. He has a Gzer Shava of Kli that is mentioned here, Bikli Cheres, to the kli that is mentioned by Mitzora. Malach Anlan, Cheres Chadasha, Avkan, Cheres Chadasha. Just like over there by the Mitzora, you require a new earthenware vessel, so too over here. The obvious question is, V'hotam inolan. How do you know over there that that's the case? Dichtiv, Shachata Tzipor Ha'achat El Kli Cheres Al Mayim Chayim. It says over there, as part of the Tarata Mitzora, on the first day of the Tarata Mitzora, when he takes the two birds, and outside the Machaneh, he shechs one of them, and that dam then goes into the water that he has, the Mayim Chaim, and then he dips the Eitz Erez, the Azov, the Shini Tolat, and the other bird into that water with the dam, and then sets the bird free. So there it says that you shech that Tzipor into the Kli Cheres on Mayim Chaim with the live water inside of it. Ma Mayim Chaim, just like there you need live spring water, Shelo Nasta Behen Melacha, that no work was done to them, and that's why they're called Mayim Chayim, Av Kli Shelo Nasta Bo Melacha. So too, the Kli Cheres that you're using has to be something that was not used yet, and that means a new earthenware utensil. It says, Ima Lahalan Mayim Chayim. If you're going to draw a parallel between Mitzora and that of Sota and have such a Gzer Shava, then let's say over there, just like by the case of Mitzora, you require live spring water, Av Kan Mayim Chayim. So too over here, you should require live spring water. Yeah, our Mishnah says that you can bring the mayim minakior from the lever that was used in the Mikdash. The Gemara says, the Rabbi Shmuel, hachanami, eno hachanami, that Rabbi Shmuel believes you do need mayim chayim, because dama Rabbi Yochanan make kior, what were the waters that were found in the kior? That is a machloket tanaim, which is Rabbi Shmuel Omer made mayan heim. They're actually live spring water, and that was the only water that you could use for the kiddush yadayim raglaim of the kohanim in the Mikdash. It can be any water that is kasher, kiddush yadayim raglayim, including mei mikveh, any water. You don't have to, but any water would be sufficient and okay to use. But then Rabbi Shmuel's l'shitato, where he believes that they make your are mayim chayim, and therefore it is a fulfillment of this gzeir shavah to mitzora, that the mei sota are required to be mayim chayim, as well as the fact that the coast into which the mayim is placed is a coast chadasha, because Rabbi Shmuel believes that when you take the water from the kior, you're actually getting mayim chayim, live spring water. Mara says, Zika la mifrach. On that gzeira shava, there is some question as to the logic of the gzeira shava. Ma le mitzora shekein ta'un eitz erez ve'ezov ushni tolat. The mitzora requires other accoutrements to his process of tadara, including the cedar wood, the bulrush, the hyssop, and the crimson string, Amarava Amakra, Bikli Cheres. So that the Gzeirah Shavah is not necessarily just a Gzeirah Shavah of parallel between the Kli Cheres here and the Kli Cheres that is found by the Mitzorah, but rather in the way that it's written in our Parsha, which is Lakach HaKoyen Mayim Kedoshim Bikli Cheres. So now it doesn't say, as Rashi says, V'lakach Kli Cheres V'natan Bo Mayim, it doesn't say that you should take a Kli Cheres, but rather simply that the Kohen puts the Mayim Kedoshim B'Kli Cheres, puts it into an earthenware utensil, as if we know what this earthenware utensil is, or basically it's something that's predefined. And since it's already been defined somewhere else, the Torah can just throw out the term B'Kli Cheres, thinking or assuming that we know what it is. And what is that? That's the Kli Cheres that we found by the Mitzorah. So the fact that it's expressed this way in the Pasha of the Sotah indicates or implies that we are familiar with this Kli Cheres. And so that's what it means, Kli Shamarti L'Chakfar, something I already described to you, or you know what it is, because I'm not telling you to go take a Kli Cheres, but simply to use the Kli Cheres. Which Kli Cheres is that? That's the one you know from the Mitzorah. Now, Amar Rava, Lo Shanu Elishnonit Akmu Panav. That's only true if it hasn't darkened or blackened. Aval Nit Akmu Panav Psulim. But if it has blackened or darkened, then it is no good. The way that Rashi learns over here, Rava here is qualifying the statement of the Rabbanan. Rabbi Shmuel requires a brand new Kli Cheres. The Rabbanan that argue on Rabbi Shmuel do not require a brand new Kli Cheres. But they do require that even if you use an older Kli Cheres, that it still be in its original state or color, and that if it's already blackened, that either is used too much or has been in the fire too much, that it would be inappropriate to use it over here. So my time, what is the reasoning behind Rava's position? Dumya demayim, ma mayim shelo nishtanu, af kli shelo nishtana. The problem with that explanation is, where do the Chachamim know that from? Chachamim over here don't connect the Kli Cheres to the Kli Cheres of the Mitzorah, so where over here do you see that there's any requirement that the earthenware utensil be new? And so Rashi understands that that's a problem and says, "Va'afagav zlo gami mitzora," even though they don't learn this out from mitzora, miu mina uba gamre. They learn it out from inherently here by sota kli the sota mi mei sota. They learn out the kli of the sota from the waters of the sota. When he ne mei sota the rabbanan lo chaim ninhu, even though according to the rabbanan the waters of the sota do not have to be live spring waters, the machshei b'shar mei mot. Because they say any water is good for the kior, is also good for the mesuta. But they're still water, and they haven't changed from the fact that they are water. If they were putrid or they weren't water anymore, then you couldn't use them. So kli also, you have to bring something that hasn't changed from its original state. So as long as it is not blackened by usage or from being in the fire, then it is still considered to be kli cheres. But if it already changes its color, then it's no longer a Kli Cheres anymore. Just like water that changed in that manner would not be considered water anymore. Tosvo challenges in some ways that assumption of Rashi by saying that if you can use Mei Mikveh for the Mei Kior, we know from the Mishnayot and Mikvaot that a Mikveh that changes color actually is still Kasher. So if that's the case, then it, by a connection to Kli Cheres, it also should be that a Kli Cheres that changes color is Kasher. And therefore Tosvo concludes over here, the Hachanami Asmachta bi'almahu, v'lekele psula midrabanan. That this connection to the pasuk is only an asmachta, and it is not a true limud, Because if it was a treat lumud, you actually would come out with the opposite conclusion. And therefore, he concludes that this is not a psul midoraita, but rather just simply a psul midorabanan, and they're using the psukim to get to that conclusion. Obviously, there were others who would suggest that Rava's qualification is actually within the position of Rabbi Yishmael. And therefore, the qualification of Rava is that even if it's a new kli, it still has to be a kli that has the appearance of being a kli cheres, and not that one that is blackened. On the other hand, like we see from Rashi and the Tosafot, this is referencing the sheet of the Rabbanan, that it cannot be blackened. And the question here is, once it's blackened, does it no longer have a status of kli cheres? And that blackening can either come about from usage or from age. And that it's, in itself is a question as to how this became blackened over here. So my time, what is the reasoning behind Rava's position? Dumya demayim, mamayim shel nishtanu, af kli shel nishtana. As we saw, the way that Rashi learns this from the Make Your and Tosafot's question on this, that leads him to believe that this limud or this hekesh over here is simply nasmachta and not midoraita. Bayirova nitakmu, if the earthenware utensil became blackened, v'chziran l'tov kivshan ha'esh, then he puts him back into the kiln, v'nit labnu, and then they were whitened, mahu, what's the din? Mi'arminan came in d'idchu idchu, do we say since they lost their ability to be used, what's called d'ichui, they were taken out of service because there was something that made them ineligible for service, and once they're ineligible, they can't be brought back. Well, Dilma came in hadur, hadur. Or maybe now, because they no longer have that soul, that it is fine. Part of this question might revolve around what putting it into the kiln actually does. When you put it into the kiln, is that simply whitening what was black before, so that you're removing the psul that existed? Or does it putting it back into the kiln and refiring the earthenware utensil actually make it into a brand new utensil? And so the question itself actually might revolve around that issue, which is that you can only have dichui if there's a psul and the psul is removed. But if you create a new kli, because the firing in the kiln is not only removing the black, but it's actually creating a new kli, then the issue of dichui is no longer relevant. Or it might be the question itself, even if you say putting it into the kiln is a way to make the kli kasher again, how it becomes kasher might also impact what type of psul that it can overcome. If it makes it into a new kli, then it shouldn't matter how the blackening happened, whether it happened because of usage or happened because of age. The fact that it's a new kli now should be irrelevant. On the other hand, if you think that it's an issue that it takes away the blackening that was there because of the usage, then maybe the whitening can remove that blackening. But if it's because of age, then maybe the kiln can't cure that problem, because even though it may cover up the blackness from the aging, it doesn't change the fact that the kli cheres is now an aged kli cheres. Unless, again, you say that putting it in the kiln actually makes it into a new kli. So all of those dynamics will help us understand what exactly would be considered a psul and what the firing in the kiln can actually rectify in this case. Tashma, Rabbi Elazar Omer, or according to Tosafot, it seems like it's Rabbi Eliezer Omer, it's Erez, Ve'uzel V'shnitolat, Shivshil Behen Kubatol Achurav. He uses these materials that are used in the Tarata Mitzora to hang his bag over his back. Psulin, they can no longer be used for the Tarata Mitzora. V'hotam Hadre Umifshite. Over there, if he uses the Eitz Erez, like he hangs his sack off the back and uses the string to tie things up, that after he's finished, he can untie them, smooth them out, and everything is back to what it was before. And yet it still says they're psulim. So what you see from there is that simple usage or being middachedem is enough of a reason to say that they may no longer be used again, even if they can be returned to their original state. Gemara says, no. Over there, maybe hotam de iklof iklufe, that they actually lost, or their bark peeled off, or their outer layer peeled off, and that's what makes them pasul, because there you're unable to bring them back to their original state, even if you can smooth them out. But maybe in the case here, where you could bring it back to its original state by firing it in the kiln, maybe over here that would be sufficient reasons to say that this kli cheres is okay. Now, Stoso points out, the way we explained it was according to Rashi, who says that over here, since it doesn't note that there was malacha done with them, you see that malacha is not the problem over here, but simply the fact that their state had changed. But he says, "V'kasha l'Rabbi mitosefta negaim," that the alma malacha posel ben l'Rabbi Eliezer gufei, The Rebbe Elazar himself believes that Melacha is Pusel with these items, and therefore that can't be what the Gemara is suggesting over here, that because it doesn't ask about Melacha, it just calls them Psulim, means that the Psul must be some sort of Dichoy. It might be the fact that the Melacha was done with them. That's what creates the Psul. And similarly over here, by the Kli Cheres, Melacha being done with it would be enough for sufficient grounds to be Pusel it, based on Rabbi Eliezer the Shittato, and that's again why it seems that Tosafot believes that the Gerson Argamar was Rabbi Eliezer and not Rabbi Elazar. Otherwise, you could distinguish between that opinion of Tosef, the Rabbi Eliezer, and our Gemara here as being Rabbi Elazar. Okay, Gemara asks, Nichnas Eichal upone leyimino. And he goes into the Eichal and then he turns to his right. My daima. Why does he turn to his right? Damamar, kopinot, shata pone, lo yuhu eloderach yamin. That every turn that you make should be to the right side. Rashi over here quotes the source for this, which is from the Yam Shel Shlomo that's set on top of the 12 Shvarim. And there in the Navi, when it describes the Shvarim as you're walking around in a counterclockwise manner, as if you're walking around to the right side the entire way. And so from that, we learn that you're supposed to turn to the right. The question of the Gemara is somewhat strange, because the location of the marble stone with the ring in it was to the right in the Heichal. And so obviously when the Kohen went in there, he had to walk to the right. So then what is the nature of the question of the Gemara over here? So the Griz over here explains that then the question of the Gemara is, number one, why was it placed on the right side? I mean, they had a choice as to where to place the Shayish and the ring. It could be on the right side, it could be on the left side. It's not a question of why the Kohen's going to the right, but why did they place it on the right, which would then cause the Kohen to have to go to the right? That's number one. Number two is what the Gemara is pointing out here is that even when you are making a turn or engage in activity which is not required bi'ah or does not part of an avoda, nevertheless, you should still be bound by this principle of turning to the right. And therefore, the Kohen here, even though there's no avoda and is going in there and there's no requirement of bi'ah, nevertheless, when he enters, he goes to the right. And so there it's teaching you a principle that this principle is broader than in cases of required entry or required avoda, and that's what the Gemara is telling us over here, these two points. Number one is, why was it placed on the right side? And number two is, it's giving us information that has broader context to it, which is this the application of this principle does not just apply in a vodota migdash or an entry issues in the migdash, but it applies more broadly that you'd always should choose to go to the right side. There was this location that was an amah by an amah, and even though there were many stones in the Mikdash, and they could have put rings in different places, part of the issue is that the Mikdash is built on a mixture of bedrock and landfill. So you need to know that you're picking up a stone or a floor stone in an area where there's actually earth found below it, and not in an area where, if you pick it up, there's bedrock sitting below there. And so that's what it means here, that it was a specific place, a specific stone, or the easier way to explain it is that simply it was noticeable because it didn't sit in properly or it had the ring on top of it. So that's what it means that it was a unique stone over there. Tan Rabbanan, Umina Afar Asher Yeah. So then when it comes to the Pasuk describing what the Kohen has to do, it says here, Mina Afar Asher Yeh Bekarka Mishkan Ikacha Kohen Benatan Elamayim. So now the Gemara says, Mina Afar Asher Yeh Yechol Yitakem Bechutz V'yachnis. Mekarka Asher Yeh sounds like you just have to bring the earth or dirt that you need from outside and bring it back in. Tamalomar Bekarka HaMishkan. That actually has to be found on the floor of the Mishkan. Ibekarka Mishkan. If it's in the floor of the Mishkan, Yechol Yachpor Bekar Dumot. That you'll have to dig with a spade and take out the dirt from there. Tamalomar Asher Yeh. That's already there. So how do we balance between these two issues? Yesham Ave, if there is loose earth that is there already, then bring from there. Ainsham Tainsham. But if it's not there, then place it down there. The way that most Rishonim explain this is that had the Pasuk just written Min Afar Asher Yeh and left out the word Bikarko Amishkan, then you would have thought that you have to bring the dirt from outside, you have to bring this earth in from outside. On the other hand, when it says Bikarka HaMishkan, then you would have thought that it was an absolute necessity that it comes from the earth that is below the Mishkan. Had it not said Asher Yeh, the combination of the two of them say, well, there's a balance. That if there is loose earth that is found at the base of the Mishkan, then take that. If there's no ready loose earth that is available to use, then asher yeh, make it available, bring it there. And so the combination of the two tells us how one goes about dealing with bringing that earth from the floor of the Mishkan. Now, Rashi seems to say something else. The Bach amends in the Rashi to basically sound like those other Rishonim, which is that it's a balance between these other two items. On the other hand, the way that the Marshal writes in Rashi is, bikarka, havaminan, beinan, mikarka, mishkan, mamash. Bikarka, so, had it written in the Pasuk, asher yeh karka mishkan, that it literally was the floor of the Mishkan, then there would be a demand that it must be the earth that is found there. But now when it says bikarka mishkan, means that the earth that is now found in the karka of the Mishkan, means that it could be earth that was brought from outside, or earth that already exists there, and that's what creates this balance. So Rashi is more focused, according to the Mashal, on big karka mishkan rather than karka hamishkan, which gives the ability to say that it's just a placement issue, not that it has to be definitionally from the floor of the mishkan. And then tani idach, we have an alternate braita, and as Rashi notes over here, this braita argues on the previous braita, and it is a makloket tanaim. And the author of our braita that we just brought before is Isi ben Menachem, who will appear later in this braita. Which is tani idach, umina afar asher yeh, v'mayeh shayeh mitakein mibachutz, umachnis bikarka mishkan. So then, used to take the earth from outside and place it there. But if that's the case, then what is the necessity of bikarka mishkan? Isi ben Yehudomer, lavi karka shilo, nov, v'givon, ubeit olamim. It comes to include the fact that not only in the karka ha-mishkan is this applicable, but it applies in other places later on, where the Mishkan will be sit, or there will eventually be a Mikdash. And therefore it will apply in Shiloh, Nov, Givon, and Beit Olamim. And that's what he learns out from the extra Bikarka HaMishkan. Not that it has to come from there, but rather that this is a reboy to include these other locations. Rashi does not like this Girsa, because he says Shiloh is the Mishkan. So since Shiloh is the Mishkan, why do you need a specific reboy for Shiloh? Nov and Givon are places where there was a Bama Gedolah after the destruction of the Mishkan, and there you were not allowed to bring a korban of sota, so it wouldn't be applicable. The only question here is Beit Olamim, and therefore Arashi wants to amend the girsa to read over here, Lavi Karka Beit Olamim, to include the Mikdash, because the Mikdash is the only thing you might have considered to exclude from the word Mishkan, and therefore the word Karka comes to include it. Tosafot does not like that, for a number of reasons, one of which is that he doesn't want to change the girsa here, because there are opinions that in Nov and Givon, that you are allowed to bring a korban sota by a bama gdola, the shita of Rabbi Yehuda is that way, and therefore that could be what the riboy is for Nov and Givon. And with regards to Shiloh, we know that Shiloh had partly a permanent structure, a stone structure to it, so therefore there could be a question over there as to what the definition of karka mishkan is. And then secondarily, he says that the problem of saying the word karka is the riboy for the Beit Olamim, for the Mikdash, is strange, because in the Mishkan, talking about the karka, the base of the floor means that it's on the earth itself. Whereas in the Beit Olamim, the Mikdash, the whole problem is that it is a stone floor. And that's why you would think maybe it should not be included over here. And so then you're going to tell me the word karka comes to include it. So he says it seems strange that that would be the rebo used to include Beit Olamim. Therefore, he favors that the girsa that we have in our Gemaras already. And then he says he favors because we know that the Gemara says in other places that Mishkan and Mikdash are used interchangeably. And therefore, just because you use the word Mishkan doesn't mean that it excludes the word Mikdash. And therefore, the primary reason that it's brought over here is to include Nov and Givon, which you would have thought should not be included, but they are through this Ribuy. Isi ben Menachem Umer, who Rashi says is the author of the position we brought before in the Breita, Enu Tzarich. Uma betuma kala, lo chileka katuv, betuma teshedish, chamura lo koshikein. By tuma kala, which means with the restriction of someone who is tamei to enter into the Mikdash. Over there we see no differentiation between the Mikdash and the Mishkan, because in the Parsha of Para, over there one point uses the word Mikdash, and one term uses the word Mishkan, so we see that they're interchangeable or non-differentiated. So over there, by that restriction, we say that there is no differentiation. The Tumat Eshed Ish Chamura, the Tumat Ben Eshed Ish, which involves a much more serious infraction because it involves a mitat beitin versus entering into the mikdash betumah, which is only a chiyuv karet, then certainly over there, that should be no differentiation between the mikdash and the mishkan. In between matom alomer bekarka mishkan. So what does it mean that you have to use bekarka mishkan? Shlo yavi bitoch kupato. That he shouldn't just bring in his basket into the mishkan, the earth that he needs. It has to come from the karka mishkan, which goes back, according to Rashi, to the previous braita, which means that you either get it from the earth that is on the floor of the mishkan or the mikdash. If it's not readily available, you can bring it in. But you can't just bring it in. You have to bring it in and place it down on the karka mishkan and then pick it up from there. Although Rashi notes over here, says that it was sifrei lo tani hachi, ach braita, that this braita is not mentioned in the sifrei, v'omrani midrash shenihu bifanim achirim, that it's a different drosha that comes from a different perspective. Because the sifrei just concludes, v'ma tama lomar umina afar sheh bekarka mishkan, ikach, whereas here, there's a more enhanced drosha, but in the end, it's coming to the same point, or making the same point, which is that you need to have the afar come from the karka mishkan, but that is either because it was sourced there, or because you bring from the outside and have it then be there to take from the karka mishkan.
Okay, we'll stop here, 5 lines down on the top of Tetzayin Amud Aleph.